Why do you say that, Father? You aren't afraid, are you?
No. But I respect some of the superstitions of others. Often they are founded in fact.
Broadcasting live from our Sanctum Sanctorum in Venice, California, this is the Sixth Sense Society. I'm your host, Krista, here with our producer, Michael, and today we welcome back to the show Haunted History BC, which is basically an award-winning sister team, Gina and Victoria, who are paranormal researchers, published authors, and historians residing in British Columbia, Canada. And today we're going to catch up with them about their second volume of their beautiful paranormal journal, as well as some other things. But before we get started, Michael does have a few announcements.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to our show. And so much fun to have fellow Canadians on. So can't have enough of that. So it's going to be a great episode. Next week, we're going to be off the air. It's July the 4th. We've been invited out, so we're not going to be around next Tuesday. And we will be back the Tuesday after with our good friends, Marnie Olson and Caroline Marshall, our astrologers, doing some astrology stuff. And then we've got tons of great stuff coming up next month in July. And don't forget, July 25th, our two-hour special with the UFO extraterrestrial stuff with all of our great guests in the round table. And our good friend Matt Apsher will be co-hosting that one with us again. So lots of fun. Get all the information on our website, sixthsensesociety.com, S-I-X-T-H, all spelled out. While you're there, buy us a coffee on Ko-Fi if you can. It helps us with our production cost. If you can't, we love you anyway. And then, you know, click like and subscribe on YouTube. One of the best things you can do to help us out. So we definitely appreciate that. And tell your friends about us. So I don't want to take up too much time because I know that these are just fascinating guests and we have a lot to cover. So I'm going to kick it back to you. So take it away, Krista.
Great, thank you. And one thing I want to mention about the astrology, we're going to be specifically talking about Venus retrograde in the sign of Leo, which starts sometimes towards the end of July. So it's a very topic-specific show and should be a lot of fun with them. So welcome, ladies.
Hi there.
Hi.
Great to be back.
Absolutely.
We love having you. And hey, congratulations on this beautiful second volume. I mean, the first one was amazing, but when I opened up and saw the beautiful photographs of the amazing architecture, I almost like passed out of just enthusiasm. I love buildings. I like, there's just something about buildings and I love taking pictures of them, but mine are not as good as that, but they're just stunning buildings in this particular one. And also the stories are amazing.
Well, funny story about volume two. So we had actually a lot more than what's in volume two. Cause at first when you're writing, editing, you think, oh yeah, this is all going to fit into one book, but it just didn't. So because of that, volume three is coming like in September. So because we had to split it in two, cause there was so much stuff we didn't even realize by the time we put the pictures in, it was getting a little too crazy. Like it would have been like a 400 page book and that would have been, you know, a little too much.
Like an encyclopedia.
Yeah. So it would have been really heavy. So we thought, yeah, because we tried to include a lot more photos because we had so many more photos this time around compared to our first volume that it got a little out of hand. So
stories we uncovered at each location that we wanted to give them justice. So we wanted to make sure we focus on each one individually and properly and give all the details this way. So yeah, that's why we kind of broke it up that way.
Yeah. And we've been returning to more locations more than once just to, you know, just to see what we get multiple times. So then of course we have like three or so many more photos.
So this one focuses a lot on Victoria. Is this the second volume going to also focus on Victoria too?
No, that's going to be the Lower Mainland. So that's going to be like Vancouver and just the areas around here, Vancouver, Burnaby, and more of the mainland. So
the outskirts.
Yeah, the more of the outskirts. So we'll have even more local locations that are closer to us. So we're, you know, Maple Ridge, Pitt Meadows. So we'll have some locations closer to us. So that's how we thought, okay, logically to split it up, we thought that's what we're going to do. And we also kind of split it up a little bit between architect, because we started looking at architects in this volume and the next volume, so that we started kind of looking at specific homes that we've gone to and like the traits of the architecture, plus the fact that most of them have some sort of paranormal or haunted haunted stories and haunted activity.
Well, the first story that you open with Francis Rattenbury is just a chilling, it scared me to death. I don't know why. I found it to be extremely troubling. So.
Yeah, well, he had, you know, quite the, not only the ghost stories for the buildings, but he had quite the life. So he was, you know, a really prominent British Columbia architect, just in a quick summary, that who built like the Parliament buildings, the Empress Hotel, which is the photo on the front of the book. And he had quite a troubling life. So he got divorced, got married to this much younger woman who is married now the third time. They ended up going back to England, where she took up with like their 18-year-old chauffeur. And then all of a sudden, Francis Rattenbury was murdered. And the murder was never really solved. It was the wife and the chauffeur that sort of were in cahoots. Somebody bludgeoned the poor architect. And yeah, so he had quite the life. And, you know, they themselves had quite the lives, all the other characters. So sometimes the ghost stories are the interesting ones, but sometimes equally are the people that we research. So we kind of wanted to include that whole story in there.
Well, that was really bothersome, like especially the way Alma dies. I mean, it's, I didn't want to necessarily give it away so people will come buy your book.
So, yeah, for
but
sure.
No, I had trouble tragic. Sleeping.
Oh no. Yeah. And you just can't imagine, like, you know, like things ending that way. So yeah. It was kind of an interesting, once we started delving in, we thought, oh, this is something that, you know, their lives were worthy of mentioning. And of course, you know, it's also like we sometimes focus on the tragedy or the negative, but they had, you know, all three people involved in this love triangle sort of had, you know, really redeeming qualities as well at times. So we kind of wanted to show that as well. You know, we look at the houses that are dilapidated and old, and we kind of, you know, bring back their glory days. And so kind of these people deserved, you know, to have their lives mentioned in a way that wasn't just all tragic and all negative.
And Francis Rattenbury as well, he was quite prominent in Victoria as well, because he managed to design a lot of buildings that we have actually captured in this volume too. So it was nice to actually dedicate this book as well in a big section of all his buildings, because he was amazing. He was very creative, and it's just mind-blowing when you actually do see the buildings, just the detail. It's incredible. And some of them were built just within a very short time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes like they were within 2-3 years, and it's just incredible. Just like the amount of effort and all the buildings, just how big they are, and just they're very grandiose. They're beautiful.
Well, and it's a really interesting point to talk about. A lot of shows that you see, paranormal shows, they go into dilapidated places, but to see these gorgeous, the parliamentary building that he designed, he was so young when he started, which is amazing. And just that it's nice to have, you know, sort of, I guess, a spectrum of buildings in the paranormal world, because we all know that all kinds of places are haunted. But I think maybe for effect, sometimes, you know, it's more of the darker, dingier buildings they want to film, it seems like. So this to me also is very appealing because of the beauty of the buildings that you're looking at. And even there are ghost stories associated with them.
Yeah, and those buildings are still used today, which is great. They're still their function, you know, the Parliament buildings. All the Parliament still has their proceedings there, and they have tours of people, and of course the Empress Hotel, all of that. And a lot of the Rattenbury buildings and houses are still used, as are, you know, many of the other buildings that we wrote about. So they're prominent fixtures today, where people have been for decades getting, you know, either going in there to have a service or stay at a hotel or whatever they're doing, you know, tourists passing through. But yes, then this ghostly activity is kind of around all that. So, and then it's kind of interesting to know that that people still come and go inside the buildings, and they still experience things. So, which is kind of, you know, that was worthy of definitely recording and writing about.
So what kind of stories did you uncover around this particular architect and his buildings? What kind of ghost stories currently?
The Parliament buildings, remember? Mm-hmm. That one was very interesting.
It was.
That actually, people do happen to see, and this is staff, current staff, have reported seeing a shadowy figure, usually in the Parliament buildings, because the Legislative Assembly does actually, they run their business in there. So, I mean, all our politicians are always in there, and the staff, so it's fully functional. But people reported in the evenings, usually when they're a little bit later in the day there, shadowy figures. Sometimes they see a man that looks like him with a mustache, and they all assume that it might be Francis Rattenbury as well. So, and they hear sometimes walking, people like with footsteps, just walking around, like,
yeah,
you know, the
things
building.
Like shuffling. It's almost like if people are still working, or and he's said to haunt for some reason a couple of his building sites. So even though he went back to England, it's interesting that people sort of see him. So you're kind of wondering, you know, when you're a spirit, like, do you get to choose, like, to go back to your happier places? Like, those buildings were his, you know, kind of his pride and joy. And he just put all his, you know, probably a lot of himself into the design, because, you know, they were always the best materials, the best stained glass. And, you know, I can't imagine creating something like that and not leaving like a bit of yourself there. So, you know, it's kind of interesting that he is set to haunt some of these places, like the Empress Hotel and the places that he built.
I was going to say, you know, it's just to mention to you guys that I suspect a lot of government buildings are populated by shadowy, shady figures. so that probably comes as no surprise.
But the thing what actually intrigued us the most was, because it is a government building, that there's a lot of ghost stories that come out of there.
I don't know. That kind of makes sense to me in some weird way. I feel like maybe because there's a lot of business that goes on, and also that idea that people that haunt always aren't doing it for negative reasons. Like, you know, this lodge here has a ghost, and it's a positive thing. It's someone that really put a lot of energy and work. At least we think this, obviously. And we've had all kinds of people investigate it too. And, you know, it's not an unhappy spirit. It's just that they spend a lot of time here, and especially Masonic brothers, they'll spend like, you know, 50 years coming to the same lodge or something. And a lot of them had very good friendships and experiences. So that idea that we would be drawn in spirit to places memorable, whether maybe it's the emotional like intensity of it, either really good or really bad. Because if you think in life, what do you remember the most? The things that are emotionally intense for you, positive and negative.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And those are such prominent places, you know, places to design. And he really liked the large buildings to design. You know, some of the architects we talk about in the third volume are more like the houses that they built in smaller designs. But, you know, the Francis Rattenbury and then Thomas Hooper, who we mentioned in this volume, they like the big commissions. Like, and, you know, it was interesting because it's such a huge project when you think about one person taking this undertaking. And like you said, he was really young. He was 25 when he got the contract to design the Parliament building. So I cannot imagine like a 25-year-old guy, you know, basically designing these buildings and knowing like all the materials and everything that goes into organizing something like this. It did go over budget quite a bit, but, you know, so it's something that he must have really, really loved doing. So it's definitely, all of his buildings have a feel when you go inside, and you can see all the different elements that are kind of Rattenbury things that he did. So it was kind of interesting to go to all of those locations and kind of compare just the architecture wise, even without the ghosts.
Absolutely. Now, how did you decide on these particular buildings and people?
I think it's just buildings that we frequent, right?
Exactly. And we're intrigued by them too, because we've never visited them before. So, but we do like to go to the island quite a bit. Almost every year we go out there, and we've been to places, and then we just sort of start researching them. But I mean, just, I think by visuals too, some of them are just incredible that you have to write about them. Mm. We're just inspired, I think. And, you know, and they're tourist attractions too. There's lots of energy, a lot of people walking through there. So, I mean, why not just put them on a map as well? Document that information. Yeah.
How do the people that work there feel about, you know, your research and your writing? Or do they know?
Oh, funny thing. Gina's got a good story. So bringing ghost equipment into the Parliament buildings was just an interesting thing in itself. So,
security?
Yeah, I don't even think I'm thinking like if you were in the States, like, could you really do that? Would they let you bring like, you know, and you know what ghost equipment looks like the REM pod, and you've got all these, you know, you could be bringing in anything like to somebody who's, you know, scanning you to go in. Cause you kind of go through the entry, like similar to the airport where you're, you know, have to put your stuff on the conveyor belt and it goes through and everything. But
X-ray machine.
And the guy was like, so what's this? And I said, well, it's ghost equipment. And so he looked at me, and the other guy says to him, what do you mean it's haunted? And he had this like look of like dread on his face. So they weren't really worried about the equipment. They were worried about the fact that now they know that there are ghosts where they work. So,
but one guy was so casual. He's like,
well, it's said to be haunted. He said, there's a lot of stories about, you know, ghosts and ghost stories about, you know, the buildings. And the other guy just didn't know what was going on. But they kind of waved us through. And, you know, we were there on a weekday, which was really nice because we sort of, you know, got permission to kind of go in and everything and kind of hunt around a little bit. I mean, you had to be discreet because there's still people coming and going and there's, you know, parliaments in session and stuff like that. So you don't want to freak people out. But yeah, it was really great to be able to go in there and have that opportunity. And that's, I think, one of the things we love is that you never know when you go into a place if it's going to be the first and only time you get to do that. Because sometimes, you know, depending on who you know and what time of day you're there, they might not let you in to do that the next time. So we always appreciate when places let us in to kind of do a little bit of like more in-depth research. So
that's amazing when you think of it. Yeah, I don't know what they would think about it. Maybe it depends on what state you're in the United States. Like maybe there's certain areas in California that might be open to it, but I can't imagine, I don't know, Washington, D.C., would they let that happen?
Yeah, especially a place that's still being used, right? Like I can see if it's empty, like they will let you go in and do all kinds of stuff. But when it's, you know, when still in full session and there's people coming and going, there's staff, there's, you know, interns and all kinds of activity, there's tourists coming through. So,
but the one guy really dwelled on it.
He did.
He waved us through and he's like, nobody told me that this is, you know, haunted.
So working late at night might have been a slightly different experience after that. I don't know. He might have been thinking, oh, I was there.
We should interview him. Go back there again.
Yeah. Maybe he'll get really interested now in it.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, he'll be a good contact.
We have great people chatting with us about a lot of these places. So that's one thing that we love as well. So.
And they do open up. They do open up when they find out that we're writing about the location. And so they definitely want to share information regardless. So we never had a moment where we felt like people were closed off or anything. We always came up with a good story.
Now, just out of curiosity, as an aside, are you a fan of Shirley Jackson's novel, The Haunting of Hill House, since you're into the buildings?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, of course.
Read it. I actually bought a t-shirt first, so t-shirts work. And I thought, I haven't read the novel. I've read other things of hers and said, well, I better go read the novel now because I got the t-shirt, right? And it's brilliant. I mean, it's really haunting in a very odd psychological way, but the idea that you know, the house itself, the buildings itself have these spirits, which I guess they get talked about somewhat, but when I think about it, when you read that book, I don't think they get talked about enough when you think about it with the paranormal. Do the spirits of the house have their own haunting abilities? And
Because it's more the people experiencing the haunting, right, in the book. So it's kind of like the things that kind of go on and all the side stories and everything. But interesting that you mentioned that one. And then because there's a few shows out there, and then one of the houses that we actually went into was one where The Haunting of Bly Manor is filmed. So that's local here. So that was kind of interesting too, to go into that house.
What is that story, The Haunting of Bly Manor, you said?
It's Bly Manor. So it was it's a series. So I don't know if it's still on or not. I never watched it, but it was just kind of one of those places where we went into the house that's on the Cecil Green Park house. Mm-hmm. And it's used as the backdrop for the haunted house.
Yeah. And there's always that question, did the haunting start first and then creepy things happened, or did creepy things happen and then the building got haunted? Or is it a bit of both? You know, that because there's some places, like I don't remember the exact town, but there's this place in Germany where they burned more women in the witch hunts than anyone else. And then later on, there was one of the concentration camps there, like hundreds of years later, they had more killings like that in that one area. And you just wonder, was it the land? Did it get corrupted? Or, you know, are there places maybe we're not meant to live in? You know, we've talked about this before, Michael and I, with some of the other ghost people, but it's just an interesting thing to think about.
I think sometimes it might be even both. I think sometimes the people who pass, there's some sort of tragedies over there that the energies are there. But at the same time, I think the living, I have a feeling sometimes the living might also contribute to sometimes the activities. And it depends, I think, on the person too.
Yeah, and your own
like
personal energy
as well.
Oh, I think the same thing going into a haunted location and the experiences that you get sometimes depends on who's going in, mm-hmm. what state of mind you're in, mm-hmm. What you're bringing in on a certain day, I guess, and or if there's a group, what they're bringing in on a certain day. Are we reminding the area of something, or the, you know, is there something that's kind of more conducive to activity when you're in a certain state of mind? So that's always, it's always something very interesting to think about.
Yeah, there's so many layers to it. You could even talk about reincarnation. Are you drawn to certain places because you've lived there before? Could you be even one of the spirits? I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
That would be odd to meet up with yourself that way.
Cross yourself like the doppelganger. Wow. You never know. That's kind of, ooh.
I just thought of that for some reason.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we've talked about with Holly before, who's also a really great photographer and a ghost investigator, was a lot of the stories have very difficult topics. And one of the things I noticed, because I pretty much read the whole book at once last night, which I was surprised I could even do. And, you know, there's a fair amount of suicides in the stories. And you can't not be affected by that. And how do you handle the part where there's like maybe, I mean, even murders, there's some murders that seem like you can handle in the sense that you can understand it, and then some that are just so gruesome. And how do you like deal with the emotional side of that when you're doing your research? And do you like balance it with watching funny things? Or it affects me a lot. There's even one story in one of the Feminine Macabres where Amanda was writing about this woman. I forget her name, but she was like supposedly a witch, and she was so poor she had 13 petticoats that she would wear. It's in one of the earlier ones. And I'll never forget the 13 petticoats that she was so cold that she had to wear these petticoats. Mm-hmm. And it haunts me. It's like, whoa, it's such a, you know, such a vivid detail. And I didn't even do the story. I just read it.
Hey, sometimes we even cry.
Oh, I do.
It's so emotional that we have to set it aside. And I know Gina, who,
yes,
she's the primary like writer of a lot of these things. Like when we do research, we do it together, but she does all the writing. And there are moments too, when you're on your own and, you know, you even tell me that you had to, you know, stop crying for a while.
Yeah.
You know? Like it was.
Yeah. Sometimes
strong.
You're writing and it's just very emotional. It's very personal and you kind of feel for the people in the story. Mm-hmm. I will say that I've had that unfortunately in my own personal life, my previous husband. So that's something that feel somewhat close to. But I think it's something that people sort of need to talk about too, because it's out there and, you know, hopefully it kind of pertains to our day-to-day lives too. If anybody is struggling, that you sort of, you know, we kind of are more open, I think, to talking about those types of things. And I think that's where, you know, certain things about the paranormal are good, because we're talking about things like death and different ways of mm-hmm. passing and murders. And, you know, there's been murders that have been solved because people are constantly, you know, bringing up things from 70 or 80 years ago, you know, cold mm-hmm. cases that have, you know, been kind of revived, and people have solved them and brought names to people who were nameless once. And so I think a lot of those topics, even though they're hard topics, but I think it's a good, you know, kind of a good way to reach people. I'm not going to say lighthearted, but kind of to reach them in a different way, just, you know, then it's something that you can kind of ponder for, you know, a moment. And if something that you can maybe relate to, great. And then, you know, maybe it can help you, you know, either in your own life or however you're dealing with that kind of stuff. But I think a lot of those topics are, you know, great to just kind of to know of it and to be aware that, you know, these people had lives.
They're human.
They're human.
And they've been in pain. And it's like, you know, it's everybody deals with things differently, but it's unfortunate that, yeah, in some cases they have a tragic ending, you mm-hmm. know? So, and it's something that I think it's good to actually bring the awareness, talk about it. It is unfortunately a sad story, but it also is a good point that everybody feels something, and, you know, and it doesn't matter whether it's in the 1800s or whether it's now in this day and age. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, everybody grieves, everybody's got issues. And I mean, we're all human. We all feel, let's put it that way. So,
yeah. And I think it also just kind of illustrates that it's not always the end of the story. Like, exactly. Because your life has passed, and it might have been tragic, but there's still people that are, you know, admiring things of yours, you know, whether it's a building or your belongings or talking about your story and just, you know, remembering you. And, you know, just like you said, the feminine macabre story, well, that woman's story is now out there and it's recorded, which is great, because these, you know, these situations aren't forgotten about. So I think that's one of the main things too. When we do our research, we sometimes dig a little deeper just to see, you know, what was there more to the story. And if there is, you know, sometimes it's not always just, you know, entertaining and freaky, and, you know, it can be serious, and it's everyday life, and it's something that we all experience. So,
and you do want to document the reality.
You basically. Do. Yeah.
You don't want to foof it over. That's the fact. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Sure. Well, the idea of storytelling is part of it is healing and finding ways by telling stories to help to heal. And maybe sometimes it's a little easier to look at certain painful events from a distance, you know, that you have. Yes. It's sometimes hard to look at what's right in front of us because it's so much here, you know, and you can have a catharsis through a little bit of distance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even when we do investigations, I think even during investigations, sometimes we come out feeling a bit drained, but mm-hmm. we always do something fun afterwards, like whether it's like going to a haunted pub or going to just to kind of right afterwards to kind of do something to kind of, you know, recharge and disconnect a bit from all the, because it can be kind of heavy. Even being in a haunted location can be heavy when you're experiencing things, and, you know, they zap you sometimes.
Yeah, we don't necessarily review all our material that same day either.
No,
sometimes we do look at the pretty photos and stuff that we took, but aside from like any EVPs, we don't try to listen to that at that point or look at anything at the moment. Just sort of, we just want to reflect a little bit and just decompress. Mm-hmm. So yeah, as Gina said, we do some little bit lighthearted fun stuff a little bit just to distract us a little bit then afterwards.
And I think too, a good reminder that, you know, spirits were people. So again, when mm-hmm. you're investigating those things or ghost hunting, yeah, it all seems very entertaining, but you just want to make sure you communicate with the spirits, if there are any, mm-hmm. in a respectful way, because they were people once, they had lives, they had real lives. And, you know, so you just want to make sure that you aren't sort of, you know, making it too like over the top. Like mm-hmm. you just want to make sure that you're respectful all the time. And
yeah, absolutely. Now, have you ever had any, like, I don't know if I asked you before, any sort of spirits that were animals that have come through when you were researching or played a significant role somehow? Like, I suppose I've read some ghost stories that include like a horse or a dog or a cat in a significant way.
The shared dream.
Well, we had the shared dream effect. I know it wasn't necessarily a haunting. It wasn't anything that where we've been to a location. We actually shared the same dream.
About a white cat.
Yeah.
And this was before I had a white cat. So it wasn't that white cat, but we both had a dream about a white cat, kind of ratty looking, sort of not really super friendly. We were sort of leery of it. And both of us had the same feeling when we were in the dream.
Yeah. And we found out through texting each other one evening, because I couldn't get this dream out of my head. So I actually texted Gina and I said to her that, yeah, I just had kind of a really strange dream and I didn't sleep very well. And I happened to mention that I had a dream about a white cat, and she writes me back. She goes, you got to be kidding me. I did too, just a couple of days ago. And we're like, what? So then she started giving me some of the details and then I filled in the blanks for her. And she goes, well, that's exactly what I was dreaming. So that was the most peculiar, weird thing we have ever happened to us.
And that was about, like the closest to like an animal type weird paranormal thing, I guess you could call it. And then we started looking up a little bit of the symbolism and, you know, that it kind of is all about good things and accomplishing, you know, your dreams type of a thing.
Working hard towards something.
Yeah, working hard and kind of, you know, all of that. And that success is kind of coming your way, which a lot of things kind of did unfold afterwards. So we always kind of say, hey, it's the white cat.
Oh, that's so neat. So then when did Casper come along?
Casper came along last year. He came along last year in July. So, and the white cat dream was probably like 6 months before that. So. Huh.
He's not completely all white, but he's pretty white.
No, but he's, yeah. That was kind of an interesting one. But as far as a haunting, not really. I mean, I felt in my life just at home in previous locations where something feels like it rubs up against you or you hear a meowing or something and you just kind of figure it's probably like my former cats. That's what I think.
And your husband noticed that too, Bill. And he's a very like a hardline skeptic, and he's noticed that too. Something like
you feel like them jumping on your bed or something. So it's more like of a personal, I would say a personal experience instead of on location. So on location, we haven't really had any creature type things happen.
No, maybe thank goodness. I don't know. I don't know, black dogs, no strange
ominous things.
We had a really weird growl one day. We have like there's underneath, there's sort of like the basement under the house that you can, you know, you can go into outside. And it was late at night and we heard something. It sounded like a lynx because I listened on the internet afterwards. It was not a regular cat and it was just so chilling. And I wanted to go out and my husband was like, maybe you don't want to go outside.
No,
so I didn't.
Kind of scare me. I'd rather be up against a bear than a cougar or something. Yeah, no.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, no.
Venice has some strange animals coming through here sometimes. I don't know. Or then I started thinking, I wonder if it was even real. I mean, it was, you know, messed with my head so much. It was like, but it was a very, very chilling sound. So that's the only sort of potentially haunting kind of, but it could have been a real cat of some kind, but not your typical cat, whatever it was.
Goodness, the one thing that probably Gina and I would love to see and hear one day is a Sasquatch.
Oh,
but we don't know how we would react to that. Like, if you know, it's easy to say we wish to see that or hear that, but when we actually are faced with it, that would be a different story.
Like from a distance, you know,
from a safe distance in a capsule or something.
You can like get in the car and drive off if something's going on, or maybe like hear the scream like in the forest, but it's far away.
Yeah,
I don't know. That would be interesting.
I want to believe in the Sasquatch, but I don't understand why they don't have any more physical evidence because everybody's like out there looking. You'd think they'd have better, at least camera. Like, at least with the UFO, there is more footage. And some of it's probably fake, but, you know, but some of it does seem real because a lot of people get the same thing. I said, why don't people put like hidden cameras in wild areas for Sasquatches? Like, what's going on here? Why are we missing? Because, I mean, you listen to people's stories and they seem totally believable. I mean, they're just regular people talking about it.
Yeah, and I think that's just it, that it's, you know, usually people that aren't expecting to see one. I think they're out there either hunting, fishing. They're not really particularly looking for a creature, but they end up having a strange experience. So I think that's part of it, is that not a lot of people who really look for Sasquatch are out, you know, I mean, there's people out there looking, but I think most encounters are people who are just hunting, fishing, camping, are not expecting to see anything. And then all of a sudden, here's this weird thing that you can't explain. So I don't know.
That seems true. Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, but they might be even mystical. You never know, because there's a theory around that too. They're supernatural.
Right.
You never know. Who knows?
Well, you know, that's true. And that maybe, too, there can be different dimensions that we live in. And if you go out into the wild, I think I can see where if you're fishing or hunting, your mind changes, like it relaxes and it opens up to things that in the city we can't do because we're trying to protect ourselves or it's too busy and we're overstimulated. Mm-hmm. But I can see where your perceptions can be more wide open in these wild places.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think it's just a whole different element out there. So it's almost like being kind of in a meditation state. So that I think then you can encounter different things if they're out there.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to see a Sasquatch or not. They're kind of big. That's the only thing.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe I'd start with a small monster. I don't know. A small one that doesn't hurt.
Just a small pale crawler or something.
I think I've had some encounters in dreams that are really weird of beings, of kinds of beings that I don't know what they are. And I do think that the dream world can represent the astral plane. So that we all can go traveling. It's not new that everybody can travel in the astral plane and visit people and see things that are there that are at least on the astral level are there. So I think you can see things more easily there, whether it's spirits or monsters or, you know, benign beings, spiritual beings, that kind of thing.
Well, that's some of the question about ghosts too. Are they always around us? Like maybe we think, oh, certain places only have ghosts, but maybe, you know, maybe spirits are always around us and they sort of exist in a parallel state with us, but you never know. It's not just maybe a haunted location.
Everywhere maybe.
But it could be everywhere. But then, you know, they might not show themselves everywhere for whatever reason, and just depends. But yeah, it's all very fascinating.
It is. And I think, well, I think Rudolf Steiner would agree with you that the spirit, not only the spirit's always around you, but I think he has this theory that a lot of inspiration will come through spirits like, you know, the equivalent of Einstein trying to inspire someone who's working on something similar, that there is this relationship with the spirits being able to do that. And which is kind of a happy thing when you think about it, a kind of positive thing. So that,
like a guidance.
I think it can be true. Yeah. Like all of a sudden, like lately, we've kind of gotten into writing short stories and they're just kind of pouring out. Like I've never had something weird like that happen. I'm thinking, where are all these coming from? But somewhere.
Well, even with our books too.
Yes.
We just, like, I don't want to say they come easy for us, but it's interesting how we both are sometimes along the same plane. We get the same ideas. We think the same way, and obviously because genetically we're sisters, but you know, but still I think that sometimes we joke, we even say that, is there something guiding us to for us to write the story? Or you know, it just coincidental that sometimes we uncover something that when we've been there already before, and then we're like, oh, this adds more credibility to our details and to the information to the story. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we sometimes we question that too. We're quite fascinated with that.
You, always, you get a pull towards a certain location, like about in a certain person, maybe not even the main person all the time. Mm-hmm. It could be like something you hear about a relative or you research, and then all of a sudden you go down the path and you kind of discover something.
And you start connecting the dots.
That leads you to something else. And then you're like, oh, maybe this is why we needed to know about mm-hmm. this, because then the end result, we'd have to, you know about this thing at the very end. So
now, do you ever connect to some of the living relatives of any of the stories?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Well, we kind of recently did, because we, you know, did the Ruskin interview.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yes. So we do sometimes try to talk to people who have either have had like pioneering family history, or especially when it's locations about like a either a ghost town or places where there's a lot of urban legends. And then I would say things like, you know, when we talk to a magician.
That's right. But also Kirkland. We just recently went to the Kirkland Heritage House Delta, out in Ladner, a city out there. And still the living, I think it was the great-grandson and the grandson too,
that are
They're still out living, and they're helping out with maintaining the home, and although the city takes over the home now, and but still, like, they're part of the foundation. They still help out. And
we got to interview some people there. Yeah. So that was really nice. This was just this past weekend. We went out there and just looked at a place that wasn't necessarily investigated before. So we kind of wanted to see if they'd be open. And they're like, yeah, you guys can come in. I think we have ghosts. They said, I wish we had more ghosts. And I said, well, you just don't know, because nobody's investigated for ghosts before. Right. So maybe there are more, but you know, but there for now that there's like a lady on the staircase that people see and some activity on the third floor. So we kind of, you know, we're kind of delving into that one, which is the beginnings of that house, because that's a whole new location for us. So
beautiful building.
That's great. You know, it makes you think, watching everybody that does ghost investigations and interviews just regular people, that it seems like the majority of people believe in ghosts. You know, there's even if they don't say it publicly, but, you know, it just seems like there's a lot, there's so many stories.
Exactly. And they all seem to either be coming out, or people are just starting to believe it more, I think. Yeah. And I've noticed that too, from a statistics point of view too, that every time we talk to someone, or even it's in the newspaper, or it's on social media, there's always something, and there's always some stats related around, like, and even,
like how many percentage of people actually believe in them. And
all the surveys. Yeah. It's crazy.
One, I think too, that a lot of times we don't think about our strange experiences till somebody might bring it up, and you think, oh yeah, you know, I had an experience back when I was a kid, or back when I, you know, you don't maybe think much of it at the time. So I think a lot of people then, once you start chatting with them, you know, realize that, oh, I've had a strange experience and I can't explain it. And, you know, then you start thinking, oh, maybe there's a possibility. We definitely don't have people who say, oh no, I don't want to talk to you at all, because I don't believe in it. So, you know, almost everybody that we want to talk to kind of talks to us about the location, whether it's their own experiences or their own stories.
You know, it'd be interesting. I wonder if it'll get to be the time where we'll have history courses in schools where they also have paranormal history, like as part of the curriculum. Can you imagine how fun that would be?
That would be amazing.
Maybe scary for some kids, though, but most kids
and
would like
field
it.
Field trip is to go to the haunted. Oh my gosh, wouldn't that be amazing?
And conduct a ghost hunt, right? There you go.
What's a better way to learn history for me? Like, I have to admit, that's why I started watching some of the shows.
Yeah.
Because of the locations they were going to. And even if the history was not in depth, it introduced me to the history. And then I could say, oh, that's a cool place. I want to know more, and go off. And I hadn't heard that story before. And so even if it's only brief and, you know, you're in that area, I found it just a nice way to learn history.
Well, you know, Krista, it's interesting you should say that, because when Gina and I embarked on our first volume, we were just sort of a little skeptical too, wondering like how we would be maybe received with all this information. We reached out to our cities, our communities here, and it's actually rather cool, because our first book was actually very well received by the city of Maple Ridge, mm-hmm. you know, where you live.
So. Oh yeah.
And it was just amazing, because we're like, wow, that it's not just the ghost hunting groups, but it's actually the city that's, you know, incorporated that. And it was nice to see that transition, you know, not just ghost hunting, not just paracons, but like actual city that, you know.
And the Heritage Society,
and
right?
The Heritage Society as well. And so I think maybe it's getting there. It's just getting there. I think it's just people feeling more comfortable talking about it, mm-hmm. and combining a combination of both the history, but also the ghost hunting, and also the ghost stories that are associated as well. Yeah.
Well, I think it's all how you present it too in your books. I mean, you definitely present it in almost more historically first, in the sense that you set the whole scene about this is, you know, even if you start off with something a little more dramatic, but it's, you get a really good sense of the history right away from your stories, you know. So, you know, reading like the second volume, you know, I don't know anything about Victoria. Michael actually lived in BC for a year when he was younger, but it made me want to go up and have tea at was it the Empress? I was like, oh, I want to go and have tea there, you know? And not every paranormal story makes you feel that way, actually. So I think you also set sort of a broad stage that allows for both to exist equally.
And that's our goal. That's our goal, to get the history out there, but make it also entertaining, but as well educational. That's our goal as well. And also to entice the younger generations, you know, learn a little bit more about history, heritage, our local buildings and sites over here. So it's, you know, just not a matter of, you know, the mom and pops, you know, enjoying history.
Yeah.
You know, it's, we want everybody to be part of it. We want everybody to enjoy it in some capacity. And you can make it your own. You can enjoy the ghosts, or you can enjoy the history. You can enjoy certain aspects of the site. It's all up to each individual person, how they perceive it and what they take back out of it.
So. And we've had a lot of people say, oh, because of, I read this, we went to that location. Because especially local people will say like, oh,
yeah,
I never knew about the police museum, or I never knew about the Empress, or, you know, those mm-hmm. types of places. Or we have a couple castles here on the island as well, that people, oh, like Canada has a couple castles. So they go visit those places because they read about them. And yeah, it might be just a walkthrough where you just appreciate all the beautiful furniture and the decor and all of that. And so, you know, and then sometimes, yes, they do go there. If we have friends who are into the paranormal, they'll go do an investigation there. So
I think that's what excites us the most, is when people actually reach out to us and say, hey, I've been there just because you've mentioned it.
Oh,
we've had an experience, or, oh, I see what you mean. You know, like, oh, we just are so tickled pink about it when we hear that. So
I bet.
That's exciting. Yeah.
Hey, we have a question from Caroline. Do you all ever visit ghost towns?
Oh, well, that's on the map.
Can we
show you? No. We've got a book.
Ghost towns. Wow.
Yes. So, and then a couple weekends ago, that's where we went, is we went to chat with a fellow who knows about a ghost town that's more or less a ghost town, but that had a lot of urban legends about like a cursed mine and different types of things. So we are slowly kind of getting into places like that. And there are a lot of locations in the interior of BC that we hope to get to. Unfortunately, the fires are keeping us away. Year after year, like, it seems to be sadly getting worse. So we always wait, and we're like, okay, well, we don't want to go in the summer. We don't want to go. And then this year, if it wasn't the fires, it was like flooding that washed out roads. So it's kind of trickier to get to certain places. Mm. But Yes, we do hope to one day go to a few places, even if it's just a little bit locally and to go a little bit further out. But ghost towns would be really fascinating.
Michael said that British Columbia has a lot because of the gold rush.
Yes,
that's correct.
We do. There was a lot of towns that were inhabited during the gold rush, and then people left them. And then all of a sudden, there's these little, you know, skeleton towns that are still sort of there, but nobody's maybe living there, or there's very few population. But yeah, there's a lot of places that are very worthy of visiting that would be on the list.
Yeah, I think it would be kind of interesting to go to a ghost town, come to think about it. I wouldn't mind. I'm sure there's a lot around here if we would just look in California. So I'm sure there's a lot of ghost towns. But that would be kind of
similar, because the gold rush extended all the way down the coast pretty much, right? Mm-hmm. So there was Washington, Oregon, probably California had a lot of, temporary places. And
now you sometimes do mention some of the indigenous lore, especially I think in the first book. And do you find you're sort of intrigued with maybe learning more about what was before? Like, I'm interested, but I don't even know how to go about it sometimes, like to learn more about, like, Venice was a sort of a swampy area and was created really, you know, I think it was like the early 1900s. So, you know, I've been trying to look into the indigenous people that were here, and I'm kind of wondering what I learned something from a children's book. It was really great about the
nice.
Blue heron and how it was, you know, became the blue heron, or was it it was the kingfisher, the nightfisher. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to figure out how to actually go about, because I was just been here for so long. I thought, well, I should know more a little bit about who was before that, you know, kind of going back further and further. And have you thought about how you would do that, or you're interested in doing that, finding stories that are ghost stories of the people that were like before Victoria was built, the buildings?
Yeah, because we recently actually connected with somebody locally who does events and everything. So we were asked to do an event at the local library here in October, but she has some connections to the Indigenous community and also Pitt Meadows, where we talked about, where my sister lives. So we talked to the person there who does a lot of the activities, and we said, can you put us, you know, maybe in contact with somebody from the Indigenous community, and we could even do something together where we kind of combine, you know, documenting all the information, but also kind of sharing the information in a way where we can combine all that. Because those are, after all, the traditional stories, right? And that has been kind of a more, I would say, more impactful than even maybe a haunted building, because that's been thousands of years back, not just hundreds of years back. So you'd have to, when we talked about like whether it's the building or the land, I think a lot of times it's the land that has the energy. So, but we just need to kind of dig a little deeper, excuse the pun. But
but it's important too, because a lot of the stories have been just passed down orally, and it's nice to maybe have them documented. So that would be fantastic. Yeah, for sure.
So when you go to interview people, what is your method? Do you record people? Do you take notes as well? I'd be kind of curious how you, because that's definitely its own process, and it's a very important process, really. It's been recording other people's stories and information has been really what shapes real history, if you think about it, you know, the primary sources. And so what is your method?
Well, we do a combination of both. We make a lot of notes. We record them as well.
We ask. We always ask, do you mind if we record you? Can we use pictures? Can we, all of that? So,
and they provide us with sometimes documentation that might be original, maybe handed down through generations. We're able to take photographs. So we do a whole combination of things. Anything we can get our hands on. You know, if people give us copies of information, that's great. So it's everything. It's a whole gamut of things. So yeah, for sure. Because we want to make sure that we are as accurate as possible. That, so, you know, we don't kind of spread misinformation. We cross-reference a lot of things. So sometimes we joke and say we're almost like taking the journalistic approach, where we feel like we're reporters rather than, you know, just historians and writers sort of thing. But you have to be that way, right? If you want to write a book and you want to make sure it's accurate.
Yeah. Plus we find people really want to talk. So nobody really has had, you know, we kind of whip out, in some cases you have like nice pastries and you whip out the wine and all of a sudden people start talking, and it's
that's
like
what happened to
they do that. So it's like, yeah, last couple weekends ago we were just talking about the ghost towns, and we went and met with a gentleman at somebody else's house that we know kind of through somebody else, you know, they kind of welcomed us into their home, which was amazing. And so they kind of converged and we got to see some documents. But yeah, crack open the bottle of wine and talk about some ghost towns history
and
hauntings. And, you know, people just love to talk about that stuff. So we found that it's always been very positive for us.
Spirits with spirits, right?
Spirits with spirits, exactly.
Now, I personally, when I was younger, because I had a really traumatic loss when I was young, and I had a hard time initially staying like present in the living world. Like I found myself not in a negative way, but I was always like trying to figure out why, you know, my brother was lost at sea and they never got his body back. So that's a whole nother level of strangeness. And I was on this mission of trying to understand it. And after a while I realized I was too much in the paranormal and not enough just living my life. And again, a lot of it was positive. It wasn't all like, you know, sorrow and pain. And so I found a system where I try to follow the cycle of nature. Like in the summer, I'll try to like do social things and go out and not only, I just found it very hard to keep it balanced because I think, well, I'm here on Earth. I am supposed to be living my life too. You know? So do you ever have that kind of phenomena happen with you where you find you're more involved in the other world than necessarily, you know, the present world?
Well, you know what? We actually try to balance that out. And that's a really good point. For instance, we like to get involved with our community. And even though we tie that in sometimes with the interest we have with our history and with our ghost stories, but we've become more, I would say, open to volunteer work. We get out in our community. And like we were doing also the headstone preservation. Mm-hmm. We volunteered for that, cleaning gravestones and whatnot, restoring them. So we get out there. And so that's
and getting together with other groups.
And getting together with other
groups. Other paranormal groups too. So, you know, we did a little bit more of that this year for a few reasons. It's fun for one thing. But the second thing is we've gone back to some locations where we've had some experiences, and then it's fun to see to kind of corroborate your evidence to kind of see what other people experience too. So we kind of make sure that we try to kind of, this year we've tried harder to kind of be in more to do more events. Mm-hmm. And we're still kind of looking at that. And so we have some chats with the city and some things that are coming forward, like in the fall, where we're going to have groups of people join us for some of our events. So we're not just going to be the two or three of us investigating, but we're going to take maybe 10, 12 people with us to a location and do things like that. So yeah, because it's a fine line. It's easy to become a hermit, especially when you're trying to write and do that.
Right.
And, like you said, seasonal too. In the fall, of course, it gets dark and you kind of don't want to, you know.
Right.
You kind of don't want to go out. It's like it's 8 o'clock and you feel like it's midnight and, you know. But yeah.
But we like the spooky season, like the September, October, we go look out for more sites and we visit them. So that's always fun and exciting. And then more in the summer and spring, we get out there a little bit, like to connect with people. And then when you mentioned the other paranormal groups, that's kind of cool too, because I know when we first started with all this, we've met a lot of great people. And many of them have told us, well, you know, we would love to get together with other groups as well with the same mindset, but it's difficult. Sometimes it's challenging. Sometimes there tends to be sort of people get touchy-feely a little bit because they're investigating the same location. But you know what? We've never run into any of that issue. We actually welcome having other groups with us. And I think we've kind of at least proved that point that we can work together. Each of us have, you know, we have our own agendas, of course, but we try not to, we're very respectful. Mm-hmm. We don't try to step over each other on that. So, yeah.
Well, I think that has to do with you setting the tone. And I have, there's someone I know, I haven't seen him for a while, but he's a brilliant scholarly person. And he's a Choctaw Indian. And yet whenever I'm around him, I never feel stupid. And he's always like so encouraging of other people's research. And he's just one of those people. He just seems to really love what he does, but sometimes I find even, you know, it's easy to slip into I know more than you, therefore, you know, we have a little more of a distance, you know, like in this case, let's say someone's been researching, you know, the building more than you have, and I feel like that's just not necessary. You know, everybody comes in at different levels, and also research is important, but also people's experience is important in the paranormal world. That's equally important.
Very true.
And we love when people have a lot of experience, or maybe they're more techie than we are, because we have some equipment, but we have paranormal friends that have like a lot of equipment. So they love the cameras and the drones and like, oh no, I couldn't begin to even try to work all those things. So,
but we love watching them.
We do. They have like handmade ghost boxes and they get all into, which is great, because you kind of have that at your disposal then, you know, then you can say like, oh, we've got this whole different element, you know, to the investigation, which is kind of nice. So, and if somebody's been at a location before we've been there, that's been really great too, because they've already can kind of, you know, kind of ease us in. Not that we, you know, talk a lot about the particular experience, because we sometimes don't want to know, but it's nice to have somebody who kind of knows the ropes in a certain, so you can kind of relax too, because sometimes going in blind is great, or being the first one there, but it can be really distracting. So usually it warrants a second or third trip, just so you can calm down a little.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was reading somewhere recently where one person in the paranormal was arguing that you should always research very well a certain place and then investigate. And I can see where that might set up a bias. So, I mean, I can see both points of view, like not knowing a lot and seeing what your impressions are versus doing the research first. So I suppose it probably depends on the individual, how, because you might hear things that you expect to hear or see if you know what is there. So I'm mixed about that. What are your feelings?
I like both. I like to sometimes go in a location because it makes it more exciting when you don't know much about it and you purposely decide not to read as much into it. And it is fun. And then at the same time, when you start hearing stories, of course, about a location, you want to read more about it. But I don't think it does influence us. I hope it doesn't. I don't think it does. I don't actually look or expect to hear, you know, like voices or like spectral cats or something, but you know.
You know, I think the same thing. So yeah, pretty much very similar. So I like to know some when we're going in, mm-hmm. like a little bit about the history maybe. Mm-hmm. We don't maybe dig too deep on the haunting side. So if there's a lot of documented hauntings, we don't really go too much into that. But the historical side, we like to know how old the building, who lived there before, that sort of thing. And then you kind of go in and then, yeah, I would say that the evidence itself is so diverse. Like if you get an EVP or you get a, you know, a voice or something, that you can't be really influenced by because you've recorded it. So, you know, it's like, it's real, like it's there, but right. So things like that. But yeah, can you imagine things? Absolutely. We always say that you can. Certain places kind of are really, you know, can induce that whole like, oh, it's spooky. So it must be that bump in the roof must be a ghost, or not always. Sometimes it's the pipes.
Exactly. Now, before we're getting close to the end, where can people get your books?
Ah, well, they can actually contact us. So go ahead and go to the website. You can do hauntedhistorybc@gmail.com. You can DM us. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram, and we will ship. I mean, it's not on Amazon yet, so we're kind of contemplating putting all the books out there once we have volume 3, like onto Amazon, but they take just such a huge chunk that, you know, I hate to sound that way, but, you know, when you're trying to kind of be your own creator, like it's, you know, you don't want them to take so much of it.
Yeah, so that's totally understandable.
We will ship. So we do PayPal, we do e-transfers, all kinds of ways that you can get our books.
Cool. And we also keep your information. I think it's your website on our page, Sixth Sense Society, for all of our guests. And I'll double check that it's there. But usually the first time you're on, we keep it up there as long as we're alive here and doing the show.
Yeah, and some of the local bookstores that, even though they're local, but they do ship to places like Monroe's and Western Sky and all their local bookstores, Bolin Books, Russell Books, they will all ship to wherever. So if you go on their website, you're able to order, and then, yeah, they'll ship a book to you too. So we like to support the smaller bookstores too. So,
yeah, I do too with my little poetry books. I do that as well because I love bookstores. And I want to do all I can to support them to stay alive, because as you know, it's difficult for bookstores, and but we all love them. So anyway, we're getting close to the end. I just want to thank you both for coming back on the show. It's always really fun to have you, and thank you for my own copy of this volume 2. I was thoroughly spooked, and I enjoyed it.
We love thoroughly spooked.
Thoroughly spooked. And I don't say that very often, so you know, you did a good job.
Well, thank you so much for having us there too. That's fantastic.
Well, we'll have you back for sure. And thank you, Caroline and Jeff, for chatting there on the side. And thank you all for listening in. Join us next time as we continue to explore the esoteric and the obscure together. Have a spooky week.